Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. Today, we bring you part two in our spring road racing mini-series. Last weekend, we celebrated the 125th anniversary of the oldest road race in North America, Hamilton, Ontario's Around the Bay. This week, we dive into the history and excitement of Toronto's spring runoff. We chat with journalist Alex Hutchinson, professional runner Dana Pitoretsky, and Spring Runoff co-founder Dave Reed. But first, Canadian running writer Maddie Kelly and I catch you up on the results and news from the roads, track, and trails. This is your rundown. Hey, Maddie.
Hey, Kate.
We got a lot to cover today.
Oh my gosh, so much.
So many things happened.
Last weekend was, I think, one of the biggest running weekends of the world.
I would definitely agree with that.
You know, not in one specific discipline of running, but across the board. Huge weekend of running.
Huge weekend. Let's get into it. We got to start with World Cross, right?
Well, yeah.
So our Canadians had some pretty incredible showings in
Aarhus.
In Aarhus, Denmark. Yeah, great team showings by all of our five teams. But I got to say, the Canadian of the day was definitely Jen Lalonde. So she's our national steeplechase record holder, and she won the Canadian Cross Country Championships in the fall, securing her spot on this world team. She ended up placing 20th in the senior women's race, which is the highest finish by a Canadian woman since 2004 at a world cross country championships.
Yeah, and I mean, Jen's such a gritty runner. You and I were both at Canadian National Cross Country Championships in Kingston in November, and it was really clear that obviously, you know, Kingston's muddy, it's really cold, it's a tough course, but Jen just looked pretty smooth. And it was cool to see her really rise to the occasion at World Cross Country and beat out, you know, some amazing women like Courtney Frericks, the American steeplechase record holder, was 57th. Yeah. And that's, you know, that happens at cross country just because it's such a variable event. But Jen is obviously in incredible shape and has a great base heading into the summer.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that probably that Canadian cross-country course was a good setup for her because everyone who was at World Cross said that it was the most challenging world cross-country course in history.
And fun.
And fun.
And fun. There's a kiss cam. I was unaware of that.
There's a kiss cam.
It was like an MLB game. Like you just sit there in your beer tent and watch people come by. And
amazing.
Jen said, like, it was truly, it wasn't running fans, it was sports fans, which is a term I love.
Yes.
But yeah, it was sports fans coming to watch, which
Very
is
cool.
really exciting for the sport.
Yeah, we don't see that nearly as much as we should in running events. So another exciting tidbit from that senior women's race was that Hellen Obiri of Kenya, arguably one of the most decorated runners in modern time, was the champion of a very competitive field. And this victory was extra special because it made her the first woman in history to earn world championship titles in indoor track, outdoor track, and now cross country.
Whoa, that's big range.
That's big range.
That's big range. It's very impressive.
Do you want to run us through our team results?
You bet. So Jen was great, but so were so many other people.
Yes.
We had our U20 women were in sixth place. Our U20 men finished 12th. Our senior women were 7th. And our senior men were 16th. So we sent really competitive teams. And these teams still performed really well, despite a few unfortunate losses due to injury.
Right.
But they're, you know, considering how crazy everyone said this course was, we're very proud of our Canadians.
Yes, and we sent for the first time a mixed gender team as well. Our mixed relay came 7th.
Super exciting.
Super exciting.
And not something we've done historically, so I hope we continue to send relay teams.
Yes.
Because they're a blast.
They are a blast. Okay, moving on to road news. It was Hamilton, Ontario's Around the Bay.
ATB.
ATB. And they were celebrating their 125th anniversary of that race.
Older than Boston, baby.
It sure is. It very proudly calls itself Older Than Boston. It's a staple for many Canadian and international runners. Walk us through what happened, Maddie.
On the women's side, we had a surprise winner. Her name's Mengistu Emebet. And she won in 145.57, which is less than a minute off of Lanny Marchand's course record. And she hasn't had many results in the last decade. She ran really well at the Boxing Day 10-miler,
mm-hmm.
but that's sort of the first time she's resurfaced in years.
Wow.
So we're hoping to get in contact with her this week and kind of find out her story, because obviously she is a really great runner and she's been doing some road races in the area, and we would love to hear more about her.
Right. I don't even think she was listed in the elite field, was she?
She wasn't listed in the elite field. I think she must be new to the area. She's from Ethiopia.
Right.
So I'm assuming she's fairly new to Canada.
Right. Well, good for her, because again, stacked field on the women's side. As you mentioned, Dana Pitereski was second, Rachel Hanna was fourth, Krista Duchesne was fifth, and of course, Krista is preparing to race at the Boston Marathon in a little over a week, and she, like many other people, was using Around the Bay as her final hard effort before that race, so we'll be tracking Krista for sure at Boston.
Very excited. And on the men's side, Dylan Wykes was the top Canadian finisher, placing third in 1:35.04. And if you want to learn more about the history of this Canadian road race staple, you can check out last week's episode of The Shakeout featuring Around the Bay.
Yes, I highly recommend it. All right, final indoor meet of the year.
We've been saying this 3 weeks in a row. We mean it.
Well, the World Masters Indoor Champs, we've been bringing you results for a while now, but they finally wrapped up over the weekend. And a few more results that we wanted to mention. Krista Bortignon won the gold medal in the W80 200, which, I mean, if I can run at 80 plus, I'm going to be very proud of myself.
Yeah, and like sprint.
Sprint, yeah.
I think people forget how hard sprinting is as
or
you
hurtling,
age.
Or hurtling.
There were 85 mobility, plus hurdlers. The mobility you need for that? It's insane. I can't do a hurdle drill now.
No.
I'm pretty young and spry. That's insanely difficult.
Yeah, people who are literally four times your age jumping over hurdles, good for them. In the 3,000 meter race walk, Denis Laflamme was second in the M65 category, while Marcel Jobin took the gold in the M75 division. So lots of medalists there. Paul Osland and Mike Schirar, both of Toronto, had a great meet. Schirar came second in the M55 400. And Osland won the silver medal in the M55 1500 meter. And then these guys met in the middle for the 800 meter, where Osland won the silver medal in a new Canadian record, and Schirar nabbed the bronze.
Very exciting for a Canadian master scene.
Totally exciting.
Outdoor track. Woo-hoo! It's happening. A bunch of Canadians opened at Stanford. They ran really well there, but the standout truly was Lindsay Butterworth. She's our 2018 800 meter champion. She ran two flat outdoors last summer, really had a breakout season, and it's clear that that was no fluke.
She's absolutely
totally carried that momentum into 2019. And she opened with an 800, 1500 meter double, running 203 and then following that up with a 413, which she won both.
Amazing.
Super strong run. She's clearly in phenomenal shape. And Lindsay's another kind of grinder.
Totally. And having these really speedy performances this early is a good indication of that.
And she's just consistent.
Yes, she
very
is.
Very consistent.
Yeah. So on the American side, we were expecting a big showdown in the women's 10,000 meter, and we were not disappointed. So Emily Sisson and Molly Huddle, who are training partners and currently preparing for the London Marathon, went head-to-head, and we knew it was going to be a fast one. But Emily ended up winning in 30:49, 9 seconds ahead of Molly, who ran 30:58. So incredibly fast times, both under the Olympic qualifying standard. So that bodes very well for them leading into the summer and 2020.
For a little context, would also both be Canadian records.
Yes.
Like these are like killer times.
And they're training for a marathon.
Yeah. Yeah. A little speed work,
yep.
You know? I think Molly posted on Instagram and she was like, I never thought I'd see the day when a 10,000 felt like fast,
right.
Short,
well,
quick.
If you stay tuned into this episode, we actually talk with Mr. Alex Hutchinson about this very fact later in this episode. So stay tuned. That's a little
I didn't even know I was teasing, but that's a tease.
Now you know. That's a tease. Well placed.
Thank you.
All right. We also had a ton of Canadians open up at the Florida Relays.
Andre DeGrasse is back.
Woohoo!
Super exciting, folks. He had to pull out of World Champs in 2017. He had a rough 2018 with his hamstring. Hopefully 2019 is better for him because he's a really good runner.
Yes,
and
he is.
He's Canadian, and we would love to see him do well on the international stage. So our Canadian men opened the 4x1 in a 38:34, narrowly missing their own facility record of a 38:11. And the team was Gavin Smellie, Aaron Brown, Brendan Rodney, and obviously the return of Andre DeGrasse. Great to see him healthy, and we really, really hope that continues into 2019.
Yes, for sure. On the women's side, our Canadian 4x400-meter team came second in 3:28.54. The team was made up of Maddie Price, Ayana Stiverne, Travia Jones, and Sage Watson. So big things to come this year for our Canadian track and field athletes, and it started off with a bang.
And we are sending in two teams to World Relays, so those teams will be picked very shortly. That's why Athletics Canada had the sprinting camp there,
right?
And that's why they opened up Florida Relays.
Very exciting. All right, finally, in trail news, the infamous Barkley Marathons took place over the weekend in Tennessee. There were no finishers for the second year in a row, although there were 6 fun runs recorded, which is a really sadistic name for completing 3 20-mile loops in under 40 hours. Listen, what a consolation prize.
And you don't even win. You finish.
Right.
Like, but which I kind of love.
You know? It's all or nothing.
It's all or nothing. Yeah. You did it or you didn't. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, if it was a track race and no one crossed the finish line, you'd have a whole bunch of DNFs. Same thing.
It's truly the same concept. 2 Canadian women went. Gary Robbins, unfortunately, was not at this year's event. But according to social media, there's been a lot of posts that would suggest that he's looking to make a 2020 comeback.
Yes. We are pulling for you.
I really want Gary Robbins to finish this just because I think that he feels it in his bones.
Yes, it is part of his being.
I don't know Gary Robbins, but
we're just assuming.
But I just think that it would really be huge for him. So,
and for Canada.
And for Canada.
So pretty cool.
We are pulling for you, Gary.
Yes.
And any other Canadian who wants to take a stab at this.
Yes, especially women. We got to get a woman to finish this thing.
Yeah. It's going to happen. It's going to happen so soon. You know, it's not a... These are totally things that women can do. And I just think as more and more people enter, it's going to happen. It's inevitable.
And we see that. We see that with the longer the distance, the closer that gap is between the genders. Mm-hmm. Or the smaller that gap is, I should say. Mm-hmm. So exciting stuff from Barkley. And finally, I love this little story. At the Badger Mountain 100 miler, we had a handful of impressive BC results. So Colin Miller and Jerry Hughes placed first and second respectively, which is very impressive. However, perhaps the most noteworthy result came from Rich Morris, who ran half of the race. So, Maddie, that's 50 miles in a badger costume. If you have not seen the photos of this yet, drop what you're doing right now and go check out the trail section of Canadian Running Magazine. It will be well worth your time.
I'm going to throw in another teaser here. Chafe City.
Okay. Oh, Chafe City.
Like, that is not breathable.
No.
Nothing about a badger costume is breathable.
Don't try this at home.
Yeah. If you have a 50-mile lot, if you were able to try this at home,
actually do it.
Kudos.
And video document it for us.
Create your own race.
Yes.
The backyard badger 50.
The backyard. You just created it. Now this is on your shoulders, Maddie.
I didn't know I was making a foyer into trail running, but
well, here we you are. Just did.
I'm sorry, Terry. This has been your rundown with Kate and Maddie. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Anytime, Maddie. Talk to you soon. Forty-two years ago, a group of young runners from the Etobicoke Huskies Track Club realized that bake sales and car washes weren't enough to help raise the funds to support their team. Athletes Dave Reed and Mike Dion, along with coach Hugh Cameron, decided to host a race in Toronto's High Park as a fundraiser for the club. 4 decades later, the Race Roster Spring Runoff 8K and 5K continues to be a staple in the Canada Running Series. Tomorrow, Saturday, April 6th, will be the 42nd running of this historic event, which has seen Olympians, world record holders, and masses of Canadian runners turn up for one of the most challenging road races in the country. Dave Reed, a Toronto native, is the former Canadian record holder in the 1500 meter and one of the co-founders of the Spring Runoff. He also happens to be my coach. I sat down with Dave to chat about the history of this exciting event.
Well, back then, it was everybody on board, and mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters came, helped out, either marshaled or did the registration, finish line, start line. So the club got to keep the money, and so it worked out real well. I don't remember off the top of my head what kind of monies we raised for the club, but it was pretty significant because I know it helped, you know, get people to national championships and things like that.
Dave tells me about sitting at his parents' kitchen table with his siblings, entering runners by hand for the race.
In our family, because me and my younger brother and sister were part of the club too, all the entries came to the house, right? So we were the unofficial registration team.
And what did that look like?
Well, there was...
What was the process?
You know, I don't know exactly how many people, more than 1,000 were running, maybe 1,500. They all came by mail to our house. And so I was in high school at the time and we'd come home and, you know, I was excited because there'd be cash and checks in the... Sometimes it'd be like 30 or 40 entries in the mail. So we'd come and we'd open them all up, me and my younger brother and sister, and we would like register them by hand. We'd make sure they was it the proper amount. And then like man or woman, age, town and all, we'd write it all out because there's no computers. And we just have a master list. And every day the mail came. For like 2 months, we would do this. And then also what people don't realize is that there was race day registration then. There was no such thing as online or sellout. So we might have had, I think some years on a good day, they could have 300 or 400 people show up to register. So you wouldn't
day
know,
of.
Day of, you wouldn't know how many t-shirts you needed, you wouldn't know how many of the, but you were guessing on everything from how many people you needed at the water station to how many people you needed to register, like pre-registration and post-registration. If you're post-reg, bring your cash only. And on a really, like if it was a sunny morning and nice day, people just decide I'm going to race and it'd show up.
How many years did you and your family enter registrants by hand?
Oh, I think
through the mail.
I think at least probably for the first 4 or 5 years. For sure, after 1986, we didn't do anything else because Alan Brooks took over the event in 1986.
Dave reminds me that it wasn't just entries that had to be hand recorded.
So now they finish the race, you're crossing the line. How do you know your time? We had a race clock. But there was no like chip timing, no bib timing. So what happened was we had like 6 people, 3 on either side. And then at the end, everybody got their number written down when they threw the chute. Okay, so you had to stay in order, go through the chute. So we knew the order of the people, right? And then we matched up.
Dave tells me about the frantic process of trying to keep everyone in order in the finishing chute while they hand recorded bib numbers and approximate finishing times.
But that was it. So for 1,500 people, that's how they got their times. And I'm not even sure people knew, had their own, like I know there was stopwatches back then and people would have timed themselves, but I think a lot of people didn't have stopwatches, so they wouldn't have known. They had to guess a little bit, but so it wasn't maybe 100% accurate, but what is, I mean, this day and age, nothing's accurate because, you know, we've got a 5K. No, it was 5.04K. And I had this, and I started in wave 3. And so
back before GPS watches, chip timing, or social media, the spring runoff drew some of Canada's and eventually the world's best runners to test themselves on this grueling course.
It was always the week after the World Cross Country Championships.
Yeah.
And often Canadians who had run at the World Cross Country would then come. We would invite them. And they would come and run the race, and there was some prize money. And it was the first event in Canada with prize money, right? So where else are they going to go, right? They're not making any money, so they come pick up $1,000 or $1,500 or whatever it was. So we had the best distance runners, male and female, in the country. They would come because it was a chance to make some money. So Canada's Olympians and things would anywhere from 1,500-meter runners up to marathoners would come and show up. And so it was always competitive up top, but it's always been like... Even back then, like it is today, there's, as Alan Brooks explained, it's competers and completers. So you'd have the elite component, but majority of the people are just out there running. And there's no way you go there to run a, first of all, it's an odd distance, 8 mm-hmm. kilometers. Back then, it was maybe a 5K, usually a 10K or a marathon. Half marathons weren't even that popular.
So why did you decide to make it an 8K?
I don't remember exactly, but I think... First of all, we want to run something more than 5K, and you can't get 10 kilometers in that park. I remember designing with the like with Hugh Cameron and Mike Dyan designing the course, and we're like, oh, we got to make it tough. So we could have made it easier, but the two massive hills are in there and still are now.
So is the course more or less the same? I know it's gone through a few iterations.
Yes. What's really the same is the last hill. That's never changed. So it's actually the first hill they run down in around a mile, and the last hill they climb up before the finish line. And we've always run down that steep, steep hill by the restaurant, by the Grenadier. But essentially, it's the same, roughly the same course, mm-hmm. which is kind of fun.
So as someone who's been to, let's call it 41 versions of this race, what are some of the most memorable stories that have come out of all of these years?
Well, the absolute one at the top of my mind was there was an ice storm in 2003, and it started icing like Thursday evening, and the race is always Saturday morning, all Friday. So essentially the city was shut down. Toronto was shut down. You couldn't do anything. And Alan Brooks called me up, and he just had a health scare too. So I was kind of really helping him. I've always been associated with helping him out. So we're like, what are we going to do? I said, Al, we can't cancel the event. So you got to give the people their money back. And we've never really experienced this. He says, okay. So we had a meeting with the park, and they would say that they would do the best they can to make it ready. But it was a pure ice, the whole city. So it's an amazing story. So I showed up that race morning at 4 o'clock, and it was pitch dark and all ice. And this is the most amazing part. So I come into the park and I see this huge snow plow and salter. And I can tell his name now because he no longer works for the city, and I'm not sure they'd ever let anybody away with it now. So his name is Mark. And I still see him to this day in and around Hyde Park. He doesn't work for the city anymore. I said, how are things? He says, we've been on it since 1 a.m. He says, I pulled 2 buddies off the city streets, and the one's down the bottom and the other's working on the hill. And we've got the plows, we've got the salters. It's tough. So they were there already for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And so they kept plowing and salting and plowing and salting. And once if anyone knows the course, the loop around the top's just under 2 kilometers, and it's relatively flat. So I said, let's not worry about this. Let's deal with the 3 huge hills that are on the course. Mm-hmm. I said, if we don't get these plowed and salted, the race isn't happening. So they pulled the guy. So each one of them took care of a hill. So they're up and down and up, and it's still pitch black. There's no one else in the park. And I'm like running back and forth to check on these. I'm like, oh, it's still bad. It's still bad. So the sun comes up and I'm like, okay, the loop around the top looks okay, but these hills are still a mess. And then people started showing up at the park. So it was about 2 hours before race time, the police showed up. You know, obviously they had police that would shut down some intersections. And I was at the top of the steep, steep hill at 5 kilometers leading down to the Grenadier Pond. And it is, anyone who's run the course knows, it's crazy steep. And I was dealing with one of the guys plowing, and he says, this is too dangerous. I'm going to cancel the race. We have to cancel the race. I looked at him and said, we're not canceling the race. It's going to happen. So by then, all our volunteers started showing up. So I said, I don't care what your job is, your job now. And we had some shovels. The guys at the park had a whole bunch of picks and shovels. So they were chopping away at the parts that were bad. They would salt, salt, salt. And the sun, I believe the sun came out that morning. So that helped a bit. So they just spent all that time for the next, because the race always starts at 10 o'clock. They had a little bit of time, a little bit more warmth to start melting it. And sure enough, by the time 9:30 rolled around, it's like, and people are registering. I went back to Al. I said, you know what? It's good to go. The top isn't great, but I'm not too worried about it because if someone slips and falls, it's not great, but they're not going to kill themselves. But if they run down that hill with that ice, somebody's really going to get hurt. And they did an unbelievable job. And the race started. And I believe I checked the results. I think it was like 1,400 finishers. And I knew there must have been at least 3,000 entered. So half the people couldn't make it there because you couldn't drive.
So the city is shut down.
Yeah,
Hyde Park is bone dry.
Hyde Park is perfect. So it wasn't bone dry, but the day after the race, I went out for a run and Hyde Park was bone dry. Like the rest of the city was still like sketch. You come into the park, unbelievable. It was a sunny day. I still remember. I'm like, look at this. Look, it's the only place because of what happened. And I don't know in 2019 whether anyone could get away with that now, mm-hmm. but we got away with it. And the show went on, and Yeah, mm-hmm. And people came and they ran. And
but that's part of the amazing part of this story, too, is that 1,400 people, I know you're supposed to have double that, but 1,400 people decided to brave it that morning, not knowing that the course was going to be as clear as you guys eventually got it to be.
Yeah, like when that police officer said, you know, we're going to cancel the event, I'm like, no, we're not. The race is going to go on. This hill is going to be fine. I don't think they let any other events in the park now. And that's the one that's probably grandfathered in, and they get behind it. And the people at the Grenadier restaurant have the pancake breakfast. And so, yeah, so the park is definitely involved. And it's nice to see that the tradition's carried on and everybody's got along and made a way to make it a win-win situation for everybody, right? And the people that haven't been, they come there and they say, this is amazing, and they see the... And it doesn't surprise me because the people that organize it at Canada Running Series do a great job, and you couldn't find a better group of people to organize all the races, let alone the spring runoff, because they've got a lot of expert people and they're going to keep up on all the latest, greatest things. And yeah, you can only do so much with the running itself, with mm-hmm. the operation side, but you can do a lot with some of the new initiatives that they've brought on. So I'm glad it's carried on, and I'm glad a guy like Alan Brooks has taken it over and done so well for all these years, because I have been there, and my memory might be wrong, but I don't think so. Every single year except one.
And how many times did you race the spring runoff?
I think two competitively. I finished second once and I won once. And then I ran a lot of times as a kind of training run with different friends and stuff, training partners. And, you know, we'd run decent, but not like all out. It's a really demanding course mm-hmm. for, I would tell that for any people thinking that you're going to do is a tune-up. I'd say you better be careful, because it's not necessarily the uphills that are going to beat your body up. It's the downhills. And they're both steep and both long. And in training, you don't go out sprinting downhills. And in the race, you're sprinting down the hill. So right. It can beat up your body a little bit if you're not used to it. We used to call it like the first rite of spring, and you know, everybody be doing their winter training. But anyone who knew the course would always throw some hills in their training, because they're like, oh, I got to get ready for the spring runoff.
I asked Dave about some of the most notable athletes who have raced the spring runoff.
The one that comes to mind, I think he might have been the first overall winner, Peter Butler, representing Canada, the World Cross Country and top 10K runner. The first year he showed up, I was actually as a junior running the World Cross Country Championships. He was on the senior team. And instead of going back home from the World Cross Country, they stopped by. They stayed at my parents' place for the week. And I remember for sure Peter Butler and another former Canadian steeplechase record holder, Greg Duhaime. They stayed at the house because we didn't have a budget for hotels. But if you could get there, hey, here's the money, show up and run. Yeah, so there was for sure the top Canadians. And over the years, there's for sure some of the elite runners in the history of Canada, both male and female, to run the event. Yeah. But still, top runners show up, and it's great to see that the tradition of elite running and supporting those athletes, and Alan Brooks has carried that through with prize money. The runners come, and it's got a great history, and it's really nice to be part of it. So there's always been an elite side of the running, and I said the top Canadians. So Alan has also brought over, through Brooks, he brought over a guy by the name of Eamon Martin, who was the Commonwealth Games 10,000-meter champion. Just a few weeks prior to that, he came over, and he was kind of the first really super elite guy, because he was like fifth ranked in the world, and he came and just thrashed the record. He was, I don't know exactly, but under 23 minutes for the AK.
22.57.
And their first mile, they were somewhere over 4 minutes, but not much. So they're absolutely flying. And he said after the race, he says when he got there the day before and saw the course, he said he just wanted to get it over with. So he ran out fast. Pretty funny. But since then, and a really interesting story, so Alan had become friends with one of the international track and field agents, a guy by the name of Kim McDonald. He represents some of the best distance runners in the world. What he came up with, he says, Alan, what about I send you the top Kenyan juniors 1 week after, so they run the World Cross Country, and we'll send them there because they've never been anywhere. One of the very first few years, they sent a guy by the name of Daniel Coleman. So he showed up and he smashed the record of Eamon Martin's and still holds it today, 22:20 something, I believe, or 22:30. So Daniel Coleman went on to set the world record and still exists in like the 3,000 meters, a time of 7:20. So he was truly, maybe even at the time, even though he was a junior, one of the best in the world. But the story I remember most about those juniors coming over, one year he sent three people over, and we put them up in a hotel at the time down by the lakeshore, by the course. But I'd always bring them up to my house because they didn't have a stove or a fridge there. So they would cook the Rugali. And the one guy's name, people who know elite track and field, his name was Sammy Kipketer. Now, Sammy went on to set the world record on the roads for 5 kilometers, 13 flat, in California, the Carlsbad race. So these guys were truly some of the best runners ever. So back to Sammy Kipketer and his friends, they come over to the house and they wanted to do some cooking. I said, yeah, help yourself. So I went out and came back about an hour later. All of a sudden I smelled all this plastic and burning. I run in the house. I said, what happened? So they took our electric kettle that you're just supposed to plug in. That has about an inch and a half or 2 inches thick of rubber at the bottom of it. They put it on the burner and turned it on, and it melted it right down to the metal so bad that there's no way in the world at the time I could even get the burner off to clean it. So I chipped away at it for probably a couple weeks. And so we had three burners for a few weeks, and I eventually chipped away so I could take it out and get a new one. But they didn't know any better. They'd never seen anything about electric kettle. But I think the house melted of burnt plastic for a couple days, if not longer. But these guys make their Kenyan team. They leave Kenya for the very first time and go to the world cross country. Then all of a sudden they jump on the plane, they come to North America. And I'm just thinking, for me, it was a fun story because they're young and they're great, you know, great kids. And the first time they traveled and all that. So it was great to be a part of.
What is your best advice of how to tackle this course, given how challenging it is?
It's challenging, but I would tell anybody, because the first mile is flat, roughly, and then you go down the hill around. But at 3 kilometers, it's the first long hill, and it's over 400 meters long, 450 meters probably from the bottom. So that's the most important part of the race to me. It's like I would tell anybody, just take your time up that hill. Even the elites, don't overdo it. Yeah. Because if you do, you get to the top of the hill, you got a long way to go, and you're not very happy. So I would just tell, that's the most important. Because the last hill is tough. It's the end of the race. So, you know, if you have to walk for, you know, because you overdid it a little bit, your finish line's right there.
Yeah.
But not if you've overdone it before that, because a lot of people don't necessarily train on hills. So they don't know what it does, and they get all excited about the first little bit in a downhill. All of a sudden, you're not even halfway through, and you're like, I think I've made a mistake. Because once you get by the first hill, you know, you run a loop at the top another mile, it's not too bad, and you're in downhill, and then along Grenadier Pond, which is beautiful down there. You know, it's tiny little inclines, but there's no hills. And then there's not a tough part till right near the end. But the challenge that people don't know with that park is you come back into the park just after 6 kilometers. And when you hit 7 kilometers, you're on their long stretch and it's windy. And it's also a little bit uphill. And more often than not, you're running straight north. If there's a wind, you're running into the wind. You're tired. It's a bit uphill. And then you've got to climb to the finish.
One woman racing tomorrow who knows firsthand the intensity of this course is Dana Pitaretsky. Originally from Windsor, Ontario, she now lives in Vancouver, but has made the trip to Toronto for the spring runoff 3 times in her professional running career. Dana represented Canada at the 2017 World Championships in the marathon and has her sights set on the 2020 Olympics in that event. But first, she'll be braving the High Park Hills tomorrow while still recovering from last week's Around the Bay. So you're coming off a second place finish at Around the Bay 30K last weekend. So first of all, congratulations on that accomplishment. I hear that you're a bit sore.
Thank you. Yes, I can't remember the last time I've been this sore. Don't know what happened out there, but I think I left my quads on the hills.
Well, but that's what they say, right? Is that you should leave everything on the race course. So it sounds like you accomplished that.
That's true. Job well done.
So one of the things that I think is fitting when talking about the upcoming spring runoff is the benefit of putting shorter races on your calendar, even if your main focus is a longer race, like a half or a full marathon. And I spoke with Alex Hutchinson earlier today about this, about the value of mixing up your racing distances, regardless of what your key outcome race is. And you're known for covering a huge range of distances in your racing year. So again, you just came off this 30K, you've competed on the international level in the marathon, and you also routinely put some pretty high level 5 and 8Ks on your calendar. So can you tell us a little bit more about why you see this as important?
Obviously, with the longer distances, you can't realistically race, you know, what you're training for the marathon more than, you know, maybe 2, max 3 times a year. So I think it's just important to fire up the system mentally. It really primes me up to get some races in, changes it up. I do think it's important when focusing on the marathon that you're not tapering for these short races. If your main goal is coming up, I think it's important to still keep that as your main focus and just remember that you might not feel wonderful during these shorter races if you have a lot of miles in the legs. But for me, it sort of just breaks up the monotony of training. And it's also a great chance to support like some of the Canadian race events throughout the country.
Speaking of wanting to support Canadian races, I think one of the things that the Canada Running Series has done a really great job of over the years is helping to support Canadian runners. They're one of the main organizations that are putting out races where they really value and prioritize and publicize their Canadian athletes. They offer prize money. What has that relationship for you been like between yourself and the Canada Running Series over the years?
I mean, it's really been like such a blessing. If I was trying to race throughout the US or worldwide, that it makes it a little more challenging to make any money. I mean, it's not just about making money, but that's helpful when you're trying to run full time. It just makes life easier in general. But Alan's support is huge. It's makes it easier to race and incredibly convenient. You know, even if we're flying from Vancouver to Toronto, it's still an easier weekend to get away.
And of course, you've done a number of the Canada Running Series events over the years. You haven't raced the spring runoff in about 6 years, but every time you've run it, you've finished on the podium. What makes this race special in your eyes? What do you enjoy most about it? And maybe also, what do you find most challenging?
It's like cross country on the roads. I feel like that course. So in a way, I'm thankful that it's a challenging course because maybe that feeds better to almost like making it seem like a longer race. It's really tough. I mean, of course, the whole event is great. That course is one of the hardest 8Ks that's probably out there. But just a great chance to test out the legs. I think this will be the second time I've raced it just within the week of Around the Bay. And I feel like I might feel that a little bit more than I did in 2011. I don't remember being quite this sore. So I'm not really sure how the hill is going to go for me this year, but I will try my hardest.
Well, you just killed a bunch of hills in Hamilton just a few days ago. So I think we'll forgive you if you find this one a little challenging. Is there anything that you would like to say about you sort of mentioned it with the environment, but the crowd support, or again, what it feels like to be a Canadian racing at a Canadian race where you get a great turnout of people there cheering?
I think the older I get, the more it means to me, just drawing from the crowd, that support, especially on a tough day, sometimes just that one person on the sideline who is cheering, that really just gets you through that particular moment that you're in. And yeah, of course, it's even better on a course like the 8K because you're constantly in like that mass spectator area. So that's definitely something I'm looking forward to. That will be very helpful.
A nice distraction from the pain.
Exactly.
What advice do you have for other runners who are maybe tackling this race for the first time?
Yeah, I feel like the 8K spring runoff is more akin to a 10K road race. And having that mindset will probably make it feel that much better. I think one of the easiest hills is that last hill because you know that you're almost done. Just sort of monitor how your body's feeling and react accordingly. And of course, like using the downhills is something that can be very helpful. So just trying to run the downhills well and use your arms and engage those glutes on the uphills.
So this race, so we saw this at Around the Bay, and we're going to see it again on Saturday at the spring runoff. The women's fields in these races are very deep. And that's actually been true for a number of years at the Canada Running Series events. But it seems like our distance running scene in Canada has really taken off, particularly in the last couple of years. Is there anything in particular that you would attribute that to? And then a follow-up would be, what gets you excited about where we're at with Canadian women's distance running right now?
I think it's great. In the past, maybe I would have been a little bit intimidated or thinking, oh, darn, like this race is, you know, stacked. I think I've really changed my mindset there. And now I look at it as it's so much easier to get the best out of myself if I have people to push me. Like the results really speak for themselves there. I think some of my best races lately have been when I've not won, when I've been challenged. So I just try to look forward to the competition and use it as a way to get that much more out of my body on the day.
What are the rest of your racing plans for this racing season for the spring and summer?
So the goal this spring is Ottawa Marathon. And that's at the end of May. And then until then, I'm doing mostly just local races in Vancouver. Tentatively, Sunrun 10K, which is the weekend after the 8K. But I will most definitely be doing BMO Half Marathon, because I believe that's about 3 weeks out from Ottawa. So it's a great chance to get in that half marathon effort.
So it sounds like you're really embracing the concept of racing yourself into shape. You've got a lot on the calendar.
Yeah. I know Alan says that I race too much, but I don't think I do, because it's more of a workout, really. Mentally, I think it's like a great opportunity to get in a hard effort.
Yeah, in ways that you can't always simulate in training, right? Like sometimes just jumping in a race, even if you think, okay, I'm not as fresh as I would have, you know, liked to have been if this had been a key event, just getting that competitive experience is, it's hard to replicate anywhere else.
Yeah, precisely. And I'll be doing my marathon, my big marathon workouts midweek, so I won't be losing out on those. Yeah, it can get really tiring just having like big week after big week with no races.
Well, we will be wishing you the best of luck in Ottawa and with all of your future marathon pursuits. But of course, before any of that, we'll be cheering for you on Saturday at the spring runoff.
Thank you so much.
I'm Alex Hutchinson. I'm a science journalist who writes mostly about running and endurance. I'm a senior editor at Canadian Running and also write for other publications like Outside.
Hey, Alex, thanks for joining us. So you're no stranger to the spring runoff yourself. I believe this is your fourth time racing the event.
Yeah, it might be fifth, actually. It's one of those ones where I live two blocks from High Park and lived there growing up, or not two blocks, 2 kilometers from High Park, and have lived here since I was a kid. When I was younger, I was always kind of in track mode in the spring. And so I only came to it as a master's runner.
Okay. And I've raced that course a few times myself. So you and I both know exactly how fun and challenging that course can be.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And that's the challenge. It's almost one of the nicest thing about it is, you know, it's so hilly that the time is almost meaningless. It's about running the course. It's a nice early spring run where you don't have to worry about whether your splits are exactly what you're hoping.
Right. So on that note, for those who haven't run it before, what are some of the most challenging aspects of this course?
Yeah, the most challenging part is the first hill, and the second most challenging part is the second hill, and the third most challenging part is the third hill. So yeah, the theme is there's at least three good solid hills which can almost bring you to a standstill, and you have to be ready for them. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to jog the rest of the race, but you have to sort of take into account that it's going to break up your rhythm. So you have to be ready for the hills, and then you have to be ready once you get to the top of the hills, not just to stay in jogging mode and to get back on the horse and keep pushing. So that sort of irregular rhythm is something that's different from a lot of road races.
So knowing that there are these really difficult inclines throughout the course, how would you suggest that people approach the hills?
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of cases where the big gaps open up between people who are running together is not during the hill so much as after the hill, because some people, we have a natural inclination to kind of push it a little too hard on the hills and then to be broken at the top of the hills. So it's better to be 5% easier on the hills and 5% harder after the hills, because that's when you'll really pick off a lot of people who are suffering from the hill.
The spring runoff features both a 5K and an 8K, although I'd say the 8K is, you know, the main show. So 8 kilometers is a bit of an odd distance. It's not contested very frequently. Would you suggest that folks go into this race treating it more like a 10K?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it depends on where you are in your training, but for the most part, a hilly 8K like this is, it's a lot closer to a 10K than it is to a 5K. So I would say starting out, you know, at the pace you might be hoping to run, or the effort you might be hoping to run 10K in a month or two when the weather is warmer, because given that it's early season and it's hilly, it's sort of mentally, in my mind, it's much closer to a 10K than anything else.
A lot of our listeners are currently training for longer spring races, so half and full marathons. And obviously things like long runs and overall mileage, they're paramount. They're very important to this type of training. But what is the value of putting a shorter race like a hilly road 8K on your racing calendar if your ultimate goal is a longer event? So what are some of the benefits, both from a physiological and a mental perspective?
Yeah, you know, there's a very important training principle called specificity, which is that you get better at what you do. But there's a flip side of that, which is that if you always do the same thing, if you want, let's say you want to preparing for a half marathon and you spend all your time running at half marathon pace and focusing on half marathon effort, you run into sort of diminishing returns, and you're actually going to get much bigger benefit from kind of working around your goal, doing some longer stuff, doing some shorter stuff, doing some faster stuff. And so I think for a lot of people who focus on the half marathons and full marathons, they've never, or maybe have rarely explored how to put all that effort, the same amount of effort and energy and mental focus to cram that into a much shorter package. And so if you can work as hard in an 8K as you would normally in a half marathon or a marathon, first of all, you're going to run faster than you probably thought you could have. And you're also going to expand your sense of how fast your legs can move and what you can do. You know, train, obviously we all do workouts and things like that, but there's no substitute for racing at a shorter distance to work on that sort of high intensity, to push your maximum higher, so that when you settle back into a slightly more comfortable pace, like half marathon pace, you have kind of more headroom on top, more space above you where you feel, yeah, I'm not right at my limits.
Are there any other specific mental benefits that people might gain? Because I think that some folks might be intimidated in thinking, you know, I'm training for a half or a full, and first of all, I don't necessarily want to interrupt that longer training to fit in a shorter race. But secondly, you know, I'm great at the longer distances because maybe I'm a bit of a shuffler, or I'm more comfortable in that really low end aerobic zone. What are some of the mental benefits to be gained by racing these shorter, faster distances?
Yeah, I mean, I think running in a lot of ways is predicated on the ability to push yourself out of your comfort zone, whether it's to go farther than you ever thought you could or faster than you ever thought you could. And so if you found a nice, comfortable pocket where you're like, yeah, I know I can run half marathons, or I know I can run marathons and I can settle into my pace, and the fear of the unknown is gone a little bit, right? Like you know what you can do. That, if anything, is the best warning sign possible that you need to shake it up and not get complacent about just doing the same thing over and over again. Do something that makes you a little bit scared. Go out fast. Feel the burn in your legs. And, you know, hey, if you blow up, it's not the end of the world. You'll still make it to the finish line. But that's the sort of, leaving aside the physiology, just mentally confronting challenges that you're not expecting is one of the best things you can do for when you go back to your specialty and you want to try and maybe go a little bit faster than you've gone before, or be a little more ambitious.
So extrapolating on that, is it safe to assume that this is advice that would carry over to training as well? You know, adding in some relative speed work like strides or shorter intervals into your training plan instead of just focusing on the long runs or overall volume?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think for me, variety is really the spice of training. It's not that speed work is better than long runs or tempo runs or better than intervals or whatever the case may be. All of these things have different benefits to offer. And so the more different dishes you can dip into, the better off you're going to be. So I'm a big believer in getting some speed work in, mixing up the training throughout a given week, and that will have benefits, you know, whatever race or whatever distance you're planning to focus on.
Do you have any specific advice about how to attack that last hill? Because for those who haven't raced it before, that last big hill is, you know, what would you say, Alex, about 400 meters long. It's very steep and it comes right at the end of the race. And of course, the Canada Running Series over the last few years has had this challenge called Kill the Hill, where they actually time how fast you can get up that last hill. So what advice would you give around that?
It is a steep and long one. And since I live close by, I've spent plenty of time doing intervals on that hill and on some of the other hills. I guess the first piece of advice I would give actually is this race, more than most other races, it will really pay off to get familiar with the course map and to understand the basic layout of the course and where the hills are, because there are a few big hills. So there's a few big uphills and a few big downhills. And knowing where they are will help you to kind of break the race into chunks. And so that you're just thinking, I just need to get to the next hill. Once I get up that, then you can get into the next section. So I think it's really important to know where you are. And, you know, for instance, not to get to like the second last hill and think it's the last hill, which would be unfortunate. In terms of how to attack the hill, I mean, in a sense, you don't really want to change what you've been doing right now in the last week. But, with running up a hill, it's not so much that you want to bring your knees up. It's that you want to be driving into the ground with your legs, pushing off from the ground, which will force you to bring your knees up. And so I guess in terms of that, that's a little bit of an abstract cue. In terms of practical advice, I would say make sure you're not leaning forward too much, like not bending forward at the hips as if you're about to throw up, but not leaning back either. Ultimately, for most people, what's going to limit you going up the hill is that your breathing is going to get out of control, not that your biomechanics aren't just right. Ideally, you want to try and remember that you're running and don't settle into a walk and keep pushing forward.
That hill has been my nemesis. I've raced the spring runoff 3 times and I've never won it. And the really demoralizing thing for me is I've always been at the bottom of that last hill with a marathoner and I've always been beaten to the finish. And each time I'm like, I'm a powerful track runner.
That's not how it's supposed to work.
Well, no, exactly. But it demonstrates that this course is a great equalizer. You know, 8K sounds pretty short if you're training for a longer race, but because of how demanding the course is, it really is a great meeting place for long and middle distance specialists.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe with that in mind, maybe one piece of advice is as you're approaching the hill, find someone you can kind of tuck behind and try and follow them up, and then just plan to beat them to the top of the hill. If you can get someone to do some of the mental work of setting the pace, that can be helpful. And also remember that once you get to the top, the finish is right around the corner. So don't save anything on the hill. You should aim to feel like you're dying 3/4 of the way up the hill, and then momentum will carry you up the last quarter and across the finish line.
Great advice. What are your goals for Saturday, Alex?
Well, I'm in that lucky category of the over 40 category. I'm in the master's category. So I've been scoping out the entry list and seeing that it's a pretty strong field this year. There's Jason Wepler, who won the men's master's race last year, is back. And Charles Bedley, who's very tough and very fit. So, I'm racing everyone in the field, but I'll be keeping a close eye on some of the other guys in the over 40 race and hoping to get on the podium.
Thank you to Dave, Dana, and Alex for contributing to this episode. And good luck to everyone at the Race Roster Spring Runoff tomorrow. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Shakeout Podcast, and check out the latest edition of Canadian Running Magazine online or via the print edition. I'll talk to you again soon.